Beth Bednar is a trainer. She's a professional speaker. She's an MC and host for nearly 20 years. She was a news anchor for the ABC-affiliated station in southern Minnesota, Austin, Minnesota. She this year has released or published, written and then published a book called Dead Air, about the disappearance of Jody Heisentrait. Beth joins us from the Twin Cities. Beth, thanks so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob.
Did I pronounce Jody's name correctly? I've been thinking about this all day. And is it Heisentrait?
Actually, several branches of the family do say Heisentrait, I've learned. But Jody herself said Heisentrait.
Oh, my gosh. I was a long way off, wasn't I?
Yes. No, you weren't all that wrong.
Heisentrait. Okay.
Yes.
I just spelled it out phonetically, so now
that's
I can.
Okay.
There's a great many people, I'm sure, still to this day remember the stories that were on the, actually all over the media about the disappearance of Jody back in 1995.
Right.
You, in fact, were in that market, or generally in that market in southern Minnesota at the time. You started, if I read your book correctly, by the way, I really enjoyed the book. It was very, very good.
Thank you very much.
And but you started the book a couple of years ago.
Yes, I started writing it a couple of years ago. Several of my friends and colleagues had encouraged me to write about it. They told me I was the natural person to write about it, and actually had been kind of nagging on my mind for several years. So I was just going to say,
for your friends to encourage you to write about it, obviously it must have been on your mind or something that you'd been talking about doing. What prompted the interest in this story for you this many years after it happened, Beth?
Well, as you can imagine, at the time it did happen, it really struck me to the core because I had walked in her shoes. I had worked as a small market news anchor person for many, many years. But after her disappearance, of course, I was just shocked and so concerned, like everyone else, that when she disappeared and so long thought about her. Over the years, though, I kept talking to friends and private investigators and colleagues in the business, and my interest, it never went away. In fact, it grew. And I just really kept thinking, I have to put this down on paper. I've got to do this. And it had really, you might say, it festered inside me for a long time. Hmm. It really was something that was burning, and I needed to do it.
Your book is not just simply a description of what happened, but is almost like another or an additional investigation into what happened. You talk about the many people from the police and law enforcement that you've that you have talked to, as you mentioned, private investigators that you've talked to, mediums that you've talked to, and we'll get to all of this. Mm-hmm. But it really did become an investigation when you set out on this. And I don't know if you kind of set out to do the book or kind of do an investigation, but did you have any hopes that you might turn something up that might lead to, because, and I guess I should say this, as perhaps most people know, nobody ever knew to this day what happened to Jody.
No, we don't know, because her body was never found. And although there was a person or two of interest at the time, there was no one ever arrested as a suspect. As you know, you cannot prove murder when there's no body. And
right.
So it's decidedly difficult to arrest someone and name them a suspect. But I guess I did not know at the time that it would turn into an investigation. But yes, it did. During the process, I began to hold out hope that maybe some of my efforts and the people I was working with, that we could uncover something. I still, in my heart of hearts, if somebody came forward with some information that would propel this case forward, that would be the perfect scenario, the perfect outcome of writing this book for me.
I'm sure that's true. You refer to, again, and you mentioned this, a number of people of interest that either were associated with Jody or people that thought they might be. All of them proved to be, at least the investigation that was done, kind of dead ends. What I found interesting, though, was you referenced several medias that took an interest in the case.
Yeah.
One in particular who drew a map that turned out to be a map of an area near a state park.
Right.
As well as seeing a number that happened to be the road that led from Highway 35, Interstate 35, into the park.
Right.
What was that experience like in terms of visiting with her about that experience?
Well, actually, I am probably the furthest from furthest kind of person. I'm very practical and pragmatic. I'm not terribly impressed by psychics as a general rule. However, this person was so compelling in what she says she saw. I flew out to the East Coast to meet her, actually, and she had involved herself in the case. When we sat down together, she began to just weave such a tale that pulled me in, and I thought, you know, there's some real, she began to impress me with her knowledge of the case and what she thought happened. She pulled me into it, and so I had to obviously include that in the book. She did draw a very compelling map when she was in the area a few years ago. She was able to direct herself to the apartment complex where Jody lived, having never been in the area before, and she described things so very openly and descriptively. She really did. She was very impressive.
What was the response of... And I know she wasn't the only one, but I know her story really struck me as well.
Right.
Like, holy cow.
Yeah.
What was the response of law enforcement to folks like her?
Well, law enforcement, we see dramas on TV that portray law enforcement and psychics working very closely together. It's not like that in real life. I think law enforcement probably... perhaps listened. I don't think that they turned them away outright, but they did not really. They never talked to this particular psychic about this case. They did talk to some others who had come forward.
And in your opinion, do you think she somehow, however psychics do it, had some knowledge of this that could have been beneficial?
I think perhaps, yes. Obviously, we're not going to stake, the case on it. But yes, I thought so. She was extremely credible, and more so than anyone else I talked to.
We're visiting with Beth Bednar, who is the author of the book Dead Air, among the other many things that you do. I'm not quite sure how you get all that you do into 24 hours, but...
Well, I do speaking and training on a regular basis, but I don't do it 5 days a week.
And has released a book, Dead Air, about the disappearance of Jody Huizentrout. You also reference a number of private investigators as well who took an interest in the case. And can you talk a little bit about, I mean, I'm assuming that a lot of these took an interest in this case for no particular monetary payment.
Right.
What was it about it that drew them to it?
Well, one of the private investigators, who's very well-regarded in the forensics field, had actually spent some time with me, was a former television colleague, and that's what drew his interest. And he has followed this case along with some other very high-profile disappearance cases around this country. So he did it without any, you know, monetary gain for himself. He has taken interest in this case. Another private investigator, however, was first hired by the family in the wake of the disappearance. He had been asked by the police department then to give up his investigation at one point.
Oh.
And after conferring with the Huizentrout family, did so, just gave over his files to the Huizentrout family.
Uh-huh.
But my talks with him were quite fascinating and informative, the things that he found out in the investigation. And a lot of it was just speaking to the people that, you know, she spent a lot of time with in her last few weeks.
Well, and even before that, it was fascinating to me, Beth, that... You said that you talked to so many people that knew her, and that you probably heard from people as many negative things about Jody as could be said. And what it appeared to me is that there were really almost two different people that people were talking about.
You know, in some cases it was. Now, I expected a certain amount of that because there's always going to be those rumors and the nasty innuendos and things that swirl around cases like these. And because she was a public figure and because I had been a public figure, I had some experience with that. I remember hearing grossly untrue rumors about myself that I thought, you know, where do people come up with this stuff? So that's kind of part and parcel of it. But the Jody that I was able to learn about from her family and her friends and her colleagues, people, generally speaking, had very positive things to say about her.
And actually, I
might add that those friends and the family were initially resistant to talk to me. They didn't want her name, you know, smeared all over the airwaves again. They really wanted to let well enough fly, and
sure.
They really questioned me about my motives for writing the book. But I might add that they have since come out, since the book has been out and they've read it, they are all highly supportive of it. They told me that I painted a very realistic portrait of the complicated woman that Jody was.
You know, I wondered about that because you obviously mentioned her family in there. You mentioned her mother and mm-hmm. I think she had two sisters.
Right.
But when you in the acknowledgments, you didn't mm-hmm. talk about them at all, and I have to say that I wondered how active or positive they felt about what you were doing.
Initially, several of them were not very positive about it. As a matter of fact, I did hear from one of her friends later after she read the book. She said, "I was prepared to be disappointed when I started the book, but," she said, "I have to tell you, you drew an extremely realistic portrait of the complicated and complex woman that Jody was. I think Jody would have been pleased if she could read it." And she said, "I applaud you for doing this, and I thank you for doing it."
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so now, I was really very pleased.
I know that you also, you mentioned that when you were on the air, and you know, anybody that is in television or out there, you know, develops a certain amount of prominence, whether they want to or not.
Right.
And you also talk in the book about some other anchors and television personalities in various parts of the country that also were attacked or killed. What is it about people in the limelight that other people, as you say, number one, need to create stories that aren't true, and secondly, become the targets of predators?
Well,
that's a long, involved question. I apologize for that. But
that's okay. The first part, the need to create stories about people, I think that just goes back to, well, for example, you can pick up any entertainment magazine and read stories about prominent Hollywood stars that are not necessarily true. People gravitate toward those people because they're kind of like the alpha males and females, the people we look up to in the pack, I think. And it's a human tendency to want to take that person that has a certain amount of prominence and maybe tear away at the veneer a little bit. They got to have some problems. They got to have some faults. What is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's probably the tendency. I'm not a psychiatrist, but in reading about this a little bit and in my research, I think that's what's going on. You look up to certain people like that, and it's a human thing to, well, let's find out what really makes them tick. The second part is a little bit more complicated, and that goes to a certain area of mental illness, certainly on the part of stalkers. Now, you know, TV personalities, they draw people in by their very appearance on the air, but viewers begin to feel that they know you and
right.
that they have a relationship with you, even if they've never met you face to face. They begin to know certain things about you. And so certain people, mentally ill people especially, might take that a little bit too far. And again, that's most people just want to get near a television personality to you know, meet them and greet them and talk to them and share a little bit with them. But some people obviously take that obsession a little bit too far.
Sure. Can you talk a little bit in the few minutes that we've got left, Beth, about as you got into this investigation and then the book, it's got so deeply into this in the terms of the number of people that you talk to and and almost like other investigators going down trails that really all of a sudden led nowhere.
Right.
Did you ever have a feeling that this was taking on more than just simply writing a book?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, sometimes I felt like I was working as a private investigator myself, and several people could tell you that I really did become, it's like a book becomes an interest. At first, writing a book becomes an interest, and then it becomes really an all-enveloping kind of consuming thing,
right.
almost like a mistress that you've got to, you know, you've got to be working on it at all times.
And uh-huh.
It seemed like for months and months, that's all I could think about and do.
And I'm wondering if you got into it ever and said, you know what, this is taking up too much of who I am, but I can't put it down.
That's how I felt. I was actually very relieved when I sent off the final manuscript. And I thought, well, there's nothing more I can do now.
Mm.
And I kept compulsively kind of returning to it and thinking, and looking at it and second-guessing and thinking, well, you know, having to tell myself, no, the line has been drawn. It's now on the other side. It's out of my hands.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Excuse me. I'm assuming, Beth, that the book is available through all major book outlets.
Yes, it is available through Amazon.com in hardcover and in e-book format for Kindle and Nook users and that sort of thing. It is also available in Barnes & Noble and Borders, the major bookstores.
Sure. And I know I was on your website, Beth Bednar, BEDNAR.com, and you've got a very busy schedule, which, again, I appreciate your taking the time to be here. But and it looks like a lot of them are book discussions and book signings. I'm assuming that if people went to your website, they can access that same information
yes,
and find out
can.
If they're close to where you're going to be doing this.
Right. If they go to BethBednar.com, as you said, BethBednar, it has my schedule on there. And if somebody wants to meet me at a book discussion or a book signing, I'd love to talk to them. I'm not going to be in the North Shore area in the very near future, although I will be in Duluth probably in the fall. We haven't firmed up a time.
Okay.
But I will be in Alexandria and the Fargo area of North Dakota fairly soon.
One last question. Are you working on a second book?
You know, I have not yet started, but yes, I am toying with the idea of a second book.
Excuse me, go ahead.
I'm not sure exactly what the topic will be yet, but yes, I am.
You're now hooked as an author as well.
I'm kind of hooked,
yeah.
Yes. I really love the process of writing.
We've been visiting with Beth Bednar. Beth is a speaker, she's a trainer, an educator, and the author of Dead Air, The Disappearance of Jody Huizenga. Beth, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us, and again, thoroughly enjoyed the book.
Thank you so much, Bob. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks.